Thank you for tuning in. We'll get to your program right after this short word from our sponsor.
In your company, a challenge? Are you battling turnover and struggling to draw key talent? Is your team not performing at the level you want? Problems present themselves through conflict, miscommunication, creative differences, unclear expectations, and motivational issues. ARC Integrated is here to address these challenges through executive coaching and customized interactive trainings. Create lasting positive change that will improve your bottom line and create a culture that attracts talent and reduces turnover by going to arcintegrated.com. That's arcintegrated.com.
What if investing in each other could change the world? I'm Joel Skeen with BizRadio.us, and this is the Mindful Marketplace.
Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us once again here on the Mindful Marketplace on BizRadio.us. I am really excited about today's conversation. We are talking with a leadership coach and mentor. And actually, Holly McCann is her name. She has a really varied and really fascinating background that we'll be able to dive into. But we're gonna talk a lot about what regenerative leadership is and what a new model of leadership looks like moving forward, which I think is so necessary and so helpful for us in creating this mindful marketplace that we are working on here. And, you know, a lot of times people ask me, what does mindful marketplace mean? And, you know, the best way I can describe it is that it's actually more of a direction than it is a place. It's more of a compass than it is a map. But we're moving in the direction of investing in each other instead of just investing in ourselves and investing in our profits. And so really excited to dive in with Holly coming up here in just a moment. But before we do, it's time to hit on the balance sheet. Each episode, each every couple of weeks, we go over the balance sheet, which I break down into assets, liabilities, debts, and investments for the Mindful Marketplace. So to kick it off with assets, one of our biggest assets, I believe, is growing our natural resources. And there's one group that I want to shout out here that's doing an awesome job at that. They are known as Navajo Power. They are a clean energy and infrastructure development project that optimizes for the economic benefit of tribal partners. So Navajo Power is actually the leading developer that possesses the necessary combination of technical expertise, cultural and linguistic aptitude, and access to capital in order to be able to develop utility scale clean energy projects in the Navajo Nation and across all of indigenous country. So they work hand in hand with tribal governments and communities across the country to develop clean energy projects that create economic and community benefits. So check out Navajo Power, really cool group. Liabilities. I'm going to dig in a little bit more on this one today. So there's a big thing going on that I have not been seeing getting a lot of talk about. And one of the biggest liabilities to the mindful marketplace is monopolies, is businesses that shut down small local independent businesses and just consolidate everything. And that happens more than anywhere else nowadays in the world of tech. So a little bit of history here. So since 1890, there have actually only been a few antitrust trials that have shaped the biggest corporations in America, like Standard Oil, American Tobacco, U.S. Steel, Alcoa, famously AT&T in the 80s, as well as IBM and Microsoft. These cases are almost always against high-tech firms that control a key sector of the economy, and win or lose, they determine what our society looks like going forward. One of today's most giant monopolies is Google. And Google is actually facing the Department of Justice Antitrust Division, as well as a state attorney's general, in a trial over whether it has monopolized the search market. It's also the first monopolization case that's been brought to trial by the Antitrust Division in 25 years. The last one was against Microsoft in 1998. So the Antitrust Department of Justice is arguing that Google has a monopoly of general search and search advertising. They control roughly 90 to 95% of the market. Google has maintained this monopoly, according to the department, not by making a better product per se, but by simply locking down everywhere that consumers might be able to find a different search engine option, making sure that the only real option they can use is Google. Google actually pays $45 billion a year to have distributors refuse to carry its competitors' products. They've signed deals with Apple, LG, Motorola, Samsung, major U.S. wireless carriers such as AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon to secure default status for general search engines. And in many cases, to specifically prohibit Google's competitors from dealing at all. So the last time a telecommunications monopoly was actually broke up was back in the 80s with the case of AT&T. After that breakup, you know, what happened is rates for consumers actually came down quite a bit. But even more importantly than the savings to consumers, there was a massive explosion of innovation because AT&T wasn't completely monopolizing the market anymore. This includes, in all likelihood, the development of the internet and mobile technology. So it's hard to overstate the impact of this upcoming court decision because it will usher in the last one in the 80s actually ushered in the modern telecommunications era. All right, next we've got debts. And one of the biggest debts that people are facing is actually credit cards. And I know that right now there's an ongoing battle over student loan cancellation that we will talk about in the future. But today, America's credit card balances, according to a new report, rose briskly in the second quarter, hitting a sobering milestone of more than $1 trillion. Just for a quick reference, because I know a trillion is kind of an insane number to think about. If you went back in time a million seconds, you'd go back in time about 11 days. If you went back in time a billion seconds, you'd go back 31 and a half years. But if you went back in time a trillion seconds, you'd be going back in time 31,500 years. And that is the milestone that we have reached, is over $1 trillion in credit card debt. The Federal Reserve Bank and the of New York reported that figure this month, that with credit cards, they are now the most prevalent type of household debt. So with prices of goods and services rising, yet wages staying relatively the same, consumers are increasingly using credit cards to cover expenses. Younger adults in particular are turning to credit cards with tighter budgets, according to a recent report from the Credit Bureau TransUnion. And while we're on the subject, I do want to remind you that the Mindful Marketplace here has partnered with a local financial tech company, Quility, to provide all of our listeners with a free consultation and a customized report on how you can best eliminate your personal or your business debt. If you're interested, go to mindfulmarketplaceshow.com and click on the Eliminate Debt link to get your free report. Lastly, investments. And I want to talk about natural investments. This is a financial services institution that is located around the country, and they became the first perpetual purpose trust in financial services. In addition, what this means is that they are transferring their ownership model from a few owners who have control of the trust to the actual trust itself, so that they can help their investors in perpetuity do things like screened corporate investing, which avoids companies and industries that do harm, and seek companies that work for a better world instead. In addition, they also help with community investing, which puts money in the hands of local people, particularly people of color and women who are buying homes, starting and growing a business, and creating resilient and thriving neighborhoods and community facilities around the world, and also impact and regenerative investing, which finances a private, deep green sustainability and mission-oriented enterprises and innovative products that can change the economic system, improve the health of natural systems, and foster social, cultural, and racial equity, justice, and wealth building. So check out Natural Investments to see how they are innovating the space of investments towards a more mindful marketplace. Awesome. Well, that's the balance sheet for today. Really excited now to dig in with Holly. I'm going to invite her into the conversation. Holly, welcome. So glad to have you here today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks so much, Joel.
Yeah, I wanted to, I want to dig in on how you help your clients and then also just kind of pick your brain a little bit because of the vast amount of experience that you have had in different sectors and really in leadership in general. But I'm wondering, could we, you know, you've got such a long kind of fascinating story here, and I would love to get to share that with our audience here. So you started off, if I remember correctly, as a corporate lawyer. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. I was the vice president and general counsel of a health plan in the Silicon Valley.
Gotcha. So yeah, fill us in a little bit about how you went from there and then to where you are here now. I know that you're new to Asheville. I'm really excited to get to meet you at 1 Million Cups. And I want to talk a little bit about your background and the journey that you've been on here first.
Great. Yeah, happy to share. Thanks so much for asking. Yeah, I spent my first career was 12 years as a lawyer and corporate executive, like we said. And I loved it. I loved my job. I loved taking on corporate-wide projects, being a part of the executive team and working on strategy and really in a growing organization. We grew by 500% in the time that I was there in the heart of the Silicon Valley, in the middle of the tech boom. All of our clients were tech companies in Silicon Valley and in the middle of healthcare reform. So it was an extremely dynamic time to be a healthcare lawyer in the Silicon Valley. I loved it. And then after, 11, 12 years, I started feeling like I really wanted to do something on my own. I was getting a bit burned out. I kept taking on more and more responsibility for corporate-wide projects, and my kids were really young, and I wanted to spend more time with them. So we ended up moving to Chapel Hill, and it was a fabulous place to raise kids, and I telecommuted, flew back for board meetings and things like that for 2 years. But in the meantime, I was also on the side building a business plan, researching the industry to open retail stationery boutiques because I loved stationery. It was sort of a hobby passion of mine. And I just wanted to do something more creative and more entrepreneurial. So I built a business plan, talked to everybody in the industry who would talk to me so I could learn about it, and opened my own retail stationery boutique with really no experience other than a part-time job in college in retail, and learned on the job, built the business up. We were break even within 6 months. 6 years later, I opened another location in Charlotte. So I was really having to develop a lot of systems to be able to manage two very geographically disparate locations and teams, and really built the businesses up to great success. I did that for 12 years. On the side, started informally and then more formally coaching with other stationery boutique owners about marketing and systems, and also about success mindset. How does your business work for you as opposed to owning you, which was really the experience that I was starting to have. And so then I went in and launched a formal online coaching program, 8-week programs online to business owners all over the world. And those hit great heights of success. In the meantime, as I'm hitting all these heights of success and all of these people are reflecting back to me, like, how do you do it? You have these two amazing kids. You have these incredible businesses, award-winning. You've got all these new businesses that you're starting and coaching. How do you do it all? And inside, I felt like such a fraud because inside I was exhausted. I was burned out. I was unfulfilled. I was unsatisfied. It's like, there's got to be more to life than killing myself for a business and trying to make a profit. And yeah, it was a really intense time. And finally, in 2014, my whole sort of type A, carefully constructed world started to crumble around me. And sort of my businesses, I had shut down my boutiques a year earlier. My coaching business that had gone to great success the year earlier started to really slow down to a trickle. I didn't know what was happening. I was doing I can figure this out. I'll just have to work harder, work smarter, whatever those mantras are when you're in that sort of type A control-oriented world. And at the same time, my personal world, I was married to a man for 20 years who was a fabulous human, and we had a great relationship. And after 20 years, I was feeling like I didn't want to be married anymore. And I was trying to orient to what that was all about. And my mom, who lived with us for 7 years while she was, in the throes of ovarian cancer, was in the process of dying. And so it was just at every turn around me, the walls were sort of closing in, and everything that I tried to do to control this uncontrollable thing that was happening around me was just not working. And for the first time in my life, I felt really powerless to do anything to make anything better, to fix anything, to keep these walls from crumbling down, until I finally just sort of was laid out into what is known as surrender. Fine, I had no choice but to surrender. There was nothing else I could try, nothing else I could do. And that set off a whole trajectory. This was 9 years ago, and I've been traveling all around the world, living fairly nomadically for the last 7 years, and working with really amazing regenerative startup companies, teams that are really working on making this world a better place, doing things differently, new models of economic flows, new energy, new healthcare, new co-living, co-working, new farming communities. So many amazing things that I was drawn into in many synchronicities throughout the last 7 years. In some cases, living with the startup teams and just really going deep, because I really was on a mission, one, to find out who I was in my own personal life, of who is the authentic me when I'm not being run by my control, my, you know, everything's got to be neat and tidy and I've got to be making money and, you know, all these sort of things, be a success in business. Who am I beyond that? And at the same time, I was on a mission to, how do we lead differently in a way that doesn't burn us out, that doesn't kill us, that doesn't leave us in a state of overwhelm constantly and lead to disease? And there's got to be a better way. And I feel like I was doing a tour around the world of all these innovative leadership styles and observing, experiencing, watching. And in the meantime, I was with, over the last 4 years, with one of my best friends who lives in Australia. She and I were launching this thing called Grail Leadership, which is really an aspirational prototyping of what I believe is the future of leadership and business models that is aligned with nature's principles, that is like ecosystems, that is looking at our businesses not as these sterile concrete organizations, but as collections of humans and living organisms, living systems, and how we really orient to that in a very different way. So that, in a nutshell, has been my last sort of journey through the business world in many varieties, many forms. It's clear that I came in to really understand deeply and broadly what leadership is all about and how do we do it differently.
Well, I first want to say thank you for your vulnerability and your openness and just sharing the things that a lot of times people are scared to share about themselves. But I know at the end of the day are the things that actually really connect us as human beings. I myself had a similar, you know, kind of moment where after, you know, 3 or 4 years in really, you know, kind of having a lot of success in business for the first time in my life and feeling like I was on this, you know, track to, you know, unprecedented, you know, growth for all eternity, you know, things fell apart. I had to very close friends get diagnosed with advanced cancer, and I was almost killed in a car accident all within a month of each other. And there are these crisis points and these crisis moments where I was asking myself those same questions, like, what really am I? Like, what really is all this? What, you know, I'd built up such an idea in my mind of what I was supposed to be based on what, you know, my culture and, you know, the environment and what other people had told me that I felt like I needed to be. And I always, you know, felt the need to live up to that. But I guess I had the experience on some level, though, of when the breakdown happens and there is that crisis, that what that really is also is an opportunity. And it sounds like that may have been similar for you. You know, you mentioned having to surrender. But it sounds like that surrendering has directed you towards this idea of regeneration, and that asking that question of who am I and what am I really? I know for me, it led me to the answer that the only way that I know who I am is to know that I'm one of us, is to know that I am just like other people and that I am in that community in sense. Do you feel like it was that same, that like, could the opportunity that you had to learn and to become who you are have happened without the crisis?
Such a great point, Joel. And no, absolutely not. It had to be sort of a complete Humpty Dumpty shattering of the shell that I had built around who I thought I needed to be, who I thought it meant to be successful, to be safe, to be secure in this world. And it had to be completely undone for me to see, oh my goodness, I had no idea. I was in very much of a a masculine-oriented, masculine-dominant world. And I don't mean male-oriented. I mean, I was running a whole lot of very masculine left-brain energy. Didn't even know that I had this like very deep feminine side, you know, to me until I really went into the dark night of the soul, went into, I teach a course on Joseph Campbell's hero's journey and Maureen Murdoch's heroine's journey. And I weave them together. And it was classic. This, I feel like these are the archetypal journeys of a life fully lived. I think most people in our world right now are living a life half lived because they're living in this upper world. What's the external definition of success, of who I should be in order to be accepted, to be loved, to be safe, to be financially secure? Who do I need to be? And everybody's, and I was very much in that. I've got to orient toward that. What's the next greatest challenge? What's the next biggest mountain I can climb and the next thing I can achieve? But when we go through that dark night of the soul, that I think I had to be in it and really be clobbered over the head from all angles because I was so stubborn. It's so much in my left brain. No, I can figure this out. I can do this. I've always come through challenges. And I just had to be taken to my knees to say, what does it feel like when I feel powerless? Can I be okay? And realize, even though it looks like my life is coming to an end, I'm not safe, I'm in total fear and totally unknown in the dark, but I'm still here. I'm still alive. There's something that's still carrying me through. So what is that? And I started getting curious through the grief and the turmoil and the confusion and just state of not knowing that was really fearful for somebody who had needed to know my world mm-hmm. for my whole life in order to be safe. So yeah, I absolutely believe that that has been the greatest thing that has ever happened to me because it blew open my world into such an entire universe that I didn't even know existed out there, of myself, of nature, of others. Like you said, when you go through that sort of underworld journey and you connect into that more feminine aspect of creation, you realize we are never separate. There is no such thing. We are always inextricably interconnected. This whole setup is a co-creation between humans and nature, between the planet and us. And it's all so incredibly beautiful. And in the midst of chaos, you realize there is a very divine cosmic order to the whole thing. You just have to take a big enough step back to see it. So yes, I think it's been the greatest thing. And often I love to go deep with people. And when I connect with people and I feel some sort of resonance with them and I can tell there's a depth to them, I'm like, tell me about your dark night of the soul time, because I can feel it's there. And inevitably, people will have a story like yours. You know, I almost died, or the walls were closing in. I went through a horrible divorce. You know, whatever that suffering is, that you feel like you're going through a death process. And in a way, you are. You're that conditioned, programmed you that's more a state of armor and more of a robot than the real you is dying. It needs to allow that part of you that you've been pushing down, that's the real you, you've been suppressing that and hiding it away in exile for so long. That's just wanting to come out like a genie that wants to come out of the bottle. So it's going to keep tapping on you, and it might start tapping with a feather.
Oh man. Then, you
know, but yeah. You're not listening.
It's so much of what you're saying is resonating so deeply. And I have written down a whole bunch of questions that I'm excited to dive in with you here on part two, specifically just for the listener here. What I want to dive into is how you integrated that success mindset that you learned with this new perspective and towards a goal that's not just about profiting for yourself, but about creating a better world in the process. So we'll start there when we come back next week here on Biz Radio US. You can listen to this episode, all the back episodes, as well as we've got lots of other great hosts here on bizradio.us. Make sure to tune in there. Also, subscribe to us here on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartMedia Radio, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you listen. Subscribing, liking, leaving a review is the best way that you can help us continue to share these types of stories and this message. So thank you so much for joining us here, Holly. We'll jump right back on to record part two. But all of you listening out there, thank you for your time, and make sure to take care of yourself and take care of someone else.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.